My first question is an important one. In-N-Out or Five Guys?
I say In-N-Out. I've been to In-N-Out a whopping one time, the last trustees meeting, and I like their fries. And Five Guys is just too expensive.
Yeah.
Too expensive.
It's a bit, you get a lot with it too. That's kind of what my concern always with Five Guys is, like, you're really putting a lot of calories in your body. In-N-Out's kind of the right size.
Yeah. I have four boys. And so my wife would say, let's get Five Guys. And it's like $120. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's so expensive. And So, and I think, I mean, In-N-Out was next to nothing. And the guy was making the fries right there.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah.
You can see him right there in the back.
I judge my burger chains by their fries. Like,
yeah.
The fries are, yeah.
They're, it's easier to get wrong, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't have good fries.
How about, do you like waffle fries from Chick-fil-A?
I like them okay.
Yeah.
They're a little heavy.
Yeah.
I think they're pretty good.
They get, like, not waffle fries very quickly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's like 10 minutes and they're no longer edible.
A little foamy. Yeah. A little styrofoam kind of flavor.
Welcome to Season 3 of 10 Questions with 10 Pastors. Brought to you by Gateway Seminary. With your host, Tyler Sanders. This episode was recorded live at the 2023 SPC Annual Meeting.
So I'm here with Keith Meyer, senior pastor of Harvest Baptist Church in Salisbury, Maryland.
That's right.
I got the pronunciation right there. And your last name right, too.
Yes.
Zero S's.
Zero S's.
Not one S.
Yeah.
Keith is also a trustee of Gateway Seminary. For probably 2 years now?
This
is your first year.
I came on the board after Anaheim.
After Anaheim. So this is like a year. Yeah, we're almost right on it.
Yeah.
And I've got a few questions for you here. The first one, can you tell us how you became a Christian?
I grew up my entire life. I was in church that I can remember. And so always around church, always hearing the preaching of the word. And I remember... they used to have these, they had these comic books, and there was one called Adam and Eve, and you would think, like, maybe this would be, like, a risky book, but it was like, it was like, you know, they were like hip 70s style characters, the devil, the character that represents the devil, like, comes in his cool Corvette type car, and then tempts Eve, and...
Yeah.
And I can remember reading this and taking the comic book to my mom and asking her, like, what is this? And her explaining it. And just always, you know, the conviction was strong. My own knowledge of my own sin.
Yeah.
And, you know, thankfully the gospel was included in the comic. And so then just a good church family, faithful preaching of the word.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. That's also a good transition because my next set of questions are all about preaching.
Okay.
So what's your approach, kind of big picture? Are you thinking like a year out, 6 months out? Or are you looking at themes, big sections?
I tend to do a book at a time.
Okay.
You know, I feel some people say they find it limiting. I find that you can drill really... You can drill down deep into a subject.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've enjoyed at Harvest. We've really enjoyed seasons of gospel preaching through the Gospels.
Yeah.
So Gospel of John was great. I'm preaching through the Gospel of Luke right now, and so I find right now Luke just seems to be a great book to be preaching through because it's very personal.
Yeah.
You know, Luke has a tendency to notice down and out or hurting characters.
Yeah.
And post pandemic, that just seems to be a it's something that people can identify with.
Yeah. I've always found it to be kind of a warm, like the way it's written feels very warm to me, you know.
Yeah. And Luke also I'm looking through as I read ahead, and then like I try to read through the book every couple of weeks, you know, even as I'm working on those smaller passages. But Luke has got these he's got these ways of demonstrating Jesus' divinity without coming out and saying,
like, sure, yeah,
he's God. Yeah. And so there are just all these creative ways in which he's demonstrating the deity of Christ. So it's kind of, it's a bit, study's a bit like finding puzzle pieces,
yeah,
you know, which is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's always, you know, and there's so many times where I'm like, oh my, wow, like, look at this.
Yeah.
And try to bring that into that the excitement of discovery into the pulpit.
Now, what's your week-to-week sermon prep routine like? Do you have like a stringent schedule or anything like that?
No, I'm not like I'm a finish it on Saturday kind of a guy.
Yeah.
You know, which I know they always say, like, don't be the Saturday night special guy. And I'm not a Saturday night special as much as I am. Like, I feel like so many things happen during the week that if I finish it on Tuesday, it's just going to feel so long ago.
Yeah.
But on Sunday, I usually write out the text by hand, you know, so I'll write out the text for next week. And then I highlight all the, you know, connective pieces. So as I'm working through Luke, it's like, okay, every reference to the disciples, you know, every reference to time or locations or miraculous things. And I just, after I write the text out, I scribble all over it with markers.
Yeah.
And just try to get the idea of like, what is the message here? I think that gospel writing is always, it's always explaining something that happened in the life of Christ.
Yeah.
But then it's also, why did the writer think that Christians would need this?
Right.
And so work on those two angles, those two contexts, and just try to nail that big idea of why is the good news good news?
Yeah.
And then I just, you know, I just kind of work it, like work through it and try to think of like what cultural things might people not understand? What do I have to explain a little bit more? I used to illustrate a lot, like, or think of illustrations ahead of time.
Yeah.
But I've slowed down on that after, I've been at Harvest for 16 years. And so I've really slowed down on, I don't try to be funny because I'm not funny when I try to be funny.
Right.
You know, if I say something that's funny, it's just going to happen in the moment.
Yeah.
But I try to come up with natural explanatory things and not really, force illustrations
right.
or that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I just kind of let it simmer after I write it all out.
Yeah.
So, and then usually Thursday or Friday, I'll go to commentaries, see what else is there, and try to lift some stuff out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Now, you say you have like a lot of markings. Is that what you preach off of? Is it kind of like the text with your marker notes on it, or do you like type it out, or?
No. Usually, like, the marker notes all go in a white file box. They pile up, and I type everything out in a Word document and print it and take two sheets of 8.5 by 11 paper and pulpit.
Oh, that's good.
My notes on
that's
it.
Good.
Yeah.
What do you think is the most difficult topic or passage you've preached?
Difficult topic or passage. Wow, that's a great question. I think that when elections are coming, you know, those are difficult seasons to preach in. There's always a question of whether or not to break out of the regular preaching to address a current event.
Right. Right.
Cause it feels like now there's always a current event.
Yeah.
And so do you just figure out what's happening in the world right now?
Right.
When I'm talking about something complex, I try to, divorce is complex.
Yeah.
Relationships between family members when they have unbiblical lifestyles, you know, I'll tend to really think through that. And a lot of times I'll write that out specifically. I'm not like a manuscript preacher.
Yeah.
I generally read a manuscript at a wedding.
Yeah.
You know, or a funeral. But I manuscript tough stuff.
Yeah.
Like, so, just because it's so easy to get it wrong.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Now, just in the general ministry now, what do you find as a role, responsibility that's kind of a sweet spot for you? And what's something that's kind of a growing edge, something you're still working on?
doing boring stuff like administration is a challenge. My wife, when my last ministry assistant moved, she relocated to Texas. Nancy suggested that I hire my current admin.
Yeah.
And said, like, she will obsess about the details for you.
Yeah.
And she loves it. You know, she's fantastic.
Yeah.
And so I can find details can get overwhelming.
Yeah.
Administration's a challenge.
Yeah.
I like one-on-one stuff. I like you know, talking somebody through a problem, helping somebody through issues. So like I will leave administration and planning behind at a moment's notice to go and grab coffee with somebody,
yeah,
or to meet up for lunch.
Yeah.
And we've got a college in our town, and we have a couple of college students who come, and so they've always got super interesting questions.
I'm sure.
So that's fun.
Yeah. And probably at weird times, I would imagine too.
They do. Yeah. If you don't text with college students, then you're not connecting with them.
Yeah.
So
what's a swing and a miss you've had in ministry?
A swing and a miss. I think that, so we've got what you probably call a normative sized church.
Okay.
You know, anywhere from 75 to 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
Growth schemes, you know, growth ideas, read this book and implement this stuff and your church will grow.
Yeah.
There have been a few seasons where I've ignored my gut and like fallen into like, okay, we're going to push this paradigm.
Right.
And those things have just, they've never really seemed to work out. Our church just hasn't broken out of its size. And I just wonder if part of that is the Lord trying to either keep me humble or knowing that there's, you know, that the size that we are is a good size.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We've been able to release people to the mission field.
Yeah.
From our church, college students we send off.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And I've been able to connect with a lot of guys in our region. We've got a church planter pipeline, and I don't know that I'd be able to do all that stuff if our church was much larger.
To
interact with those folks and coach and help.
That's valuable.
So, yeah.
That's very valuable.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of seminary, because we talked a little before we started recording, you are a grad of Columbia International University.
CIU, yep.
Yeah, for your MDiv.
Yes.
So one of the things I always ask people is, like, if a student goes to seminary, what's the thing they can't miss? Like, if they leave seminary, they don't have this. They've missed something that they need. What do you think that would be?
I think that if you are... if you're going to go into the pastorate, if you're getting an MDiv pastoral degree, I think you're never going to go to a conference on languages, right? You know, you may be able to go to a conference and learn a church growth paradigm. You can learn leadership pipelines. You can learn high performing teams, small groups, children's ministry. You can pick up all that stuff because we're sitting in a convention hall full of people.
Yeah.
With the exception of Lagos, which is here, nobody's pushing languages.
Yeah.
And my Greek professor, my intro to Greek professor, he said that knowing Greek will enable you to, when someone, you'll be able to say this word or this idea, you know, it could be A, B, or C, but you will know it is not X, you know?
Yeah.
And that idea has just been so valuable.
Yeah.
It's so easy to tell folks or for people to say to folks who don't know the languages, oh, well, this Greek word really means.
Yeah.
And I think you can really lead people astray if you don't work hard and don't have integrity or don't know. So,
yeah.
Languages.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think languages are important.
Now, what are you reading right now? What's in your reading list?
I am on our state abuse task force. And so I've been doing a lot of reading on that.
Yeah.
So I'm reading a book called Safeguards by Julie Lowe.
Hmm.
And the gist of the book is that she takes the verse from the book of Hebrews where the author says that meat is for those who through their discerning, you know, through their steady discipline have learned to discern between good and evil. And so her whole paradigm is teach kids discernment. Don't teach them to like run away from particular things,
right?
Particular scenarios. Like teach them what's good, teach them what's evil.
Yeah.
So that they can, because so many of the rules that there are rules that are common things that we repeat, like stranger danger.
Oh, yeah.
But you don't want your child who's lost, like at an amusement park, you want them to go find somebody,
right?
You know, not just like to cower and wait until they see somebody they know.
So
in some situations, strangers can be dangerous,
helpful,
and others
yeah.
they can be good.
Yeah.
Interesting book. And I just started reading that before we left.
That sounds good.
So, yeah.
My final question.
Yeah.
If you could give yourself advice, like when you were a first year pastor, what would you tell yourself?
I would say be humble and let people speak into your life about things that you're good at and things that you're not great at.
Yeah.
And don't necessarily focus on fixing all your weaknesses. You can hire a strong admin to handle planning.
Yeah.
But like, if you're really good with people or with preaching or teaching, then lean into that, hone that.
Yeah.
And don't try to do everything yourself.
Yeah.
It's very easy, I think, to try to do everything to prove that you're worthy or that you're capable.
You're good enough. Yeah.
And the only member of the body who's good at everything is the head, right? It's Jesus.
Yeah, right.
All the rest of us are limited.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's a great image. I've never heard that before, but that's a great way to put that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time, Keith.
Absolutely.
That was wonderful. Thanks for answering all these questions.
Thanks for having me on.